Hi, Dave Emmer here. Side one of For the Record program number 768. What the hell does Dave Emery mean by underground Reich? Part one, the Naumann coup attempt. This has been recorded on January 5th of the year 2014. I can appreciate that listeners, particularly newer listeners, when they hear me talking about an underground Reich, they must be thinking, oh boy, this guy is off his meds. You know, call somebody and get this poor fellow some help. I can appreciate that. Sadly, there is a lot of evidence that the Third Reich did indeed go underground. It wasn't an aberration in the first place, but rather the outgrowth of some very, very powerful forces which did not go away at the end of World War II, just as the Mafia began as a resistance movement in 12th and 13th century Sicily to Norse and Saracen invaders, and perpetuated itself, so too the Third Reich has perpetuated itself as well, due in no small measure to the very powerful forces allied with it. We're going to go back to AFA program number 37, recorded in the summer and fall of 1992, going back more than 20 years, and we're going to listen to a coup attempt that took place in 1953 in Germany when it was investigated. It uncovered a clandestine Nazi worldwide structure in which a Nazi government in exile in Madrid, Spain, under Franco, was actually pulling the strings of the German government and a worldwide Nazi movement. In turn, the Bormann Capital Organization, about which I've spoken so many times, would have been the ultimate top rung on this particular totem pole, so to speak. The book that you are going to hear excerpted in this side of AFA 37 is The New Germany and the Old Nazis by T. H. Tettens, last name T-E-T-E-N-S. The book was published in hardcover by Random House in 1961. It is available for download for free in its entirety in the books section of the SpitfireList.com website. Who was Mr. Tettens? The curriculum vitae, so to speak, a summation of his career. T.H. Tettens, a leading expert on German geopolitics, was born in Berlin and worked during the 1920s in Germany as an economist and a newspaper editor. For more than 30 years, he has studied the Pan-Germanic movement, the Nazi Party, and the strategic theories of German geopolitics. When Hitler came to power, Mr. Tettens was put in the concentration camp. He escaped to Switzerland in 1934, and there in both pamphlet and newspaper articles he foretold the coming German assault on Europe. In 1938, Mr. Tettens came to the United States and began research on German problems for government agencies and private organizations. From 1946 to 1947, he served with the U.S. War Crimes Commission in Washington. Now let's hear what Mr. Tettens had to say about the Naumann coup attempt from 1953 and what it uncovered.
T.H. Tettens writes as follows of the Naumann coup attempt. Late on the night of January 14, 1953, the telephones rang in the homes of newspaper correspondents representing the foreign press in London. The sleeping newsmen responding to the calls were requested by a Foreign Office official to assemble at Downing Street by 7 o'clock the following morning for an important press conference. There was little doubt that something extraordinary had happened, since it was the first time since the end of the war that a news conference had been scheduled for such an unusual hour. The next morning, shortly after 7, the head of the press division of the Foreign Office, Sir William Ridsdale, R-I-D-S-D-A-L-E, distributed a communique which stated that a group of 7 former high Nazi officials had been arrested in Dusseldorf and Hamburg for having plotted the overthrow of the Bonn Republic. The official announcement said that the British authorities had been aware for some time that the seven men had been involved in a plot and that the arrest had been made under the authority of Foreign Minister Anthony Eden. The ringleader of the group was a Dr. Werner Naumann, N-A-U-M-A-N-N, who until the German collapse had served as State Secretary in Dr. Goebbels' propaganda ministry. Dr. Naumann had been with Hitler during the very last days in the bunker of the Chancellery in Berlin, and he was the one designated by the Führer in his testament to succeed Dr. Goebbels as propaganda minister. Last sentence again. Dr. Naumann had been with Hitler during the very last days in the bunker of the Chancellery in Berlin, and he was the one designated by the Führer in his testament to succeed Dr. Goebbels as propaganda minister. Arrested along with Naumann were the following prominent Nazis: Karl Kaufmann, K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N, one-time Gauleiter of Hamburg; Paul Zimmermann, Z-I-M-M-E-R-M-A-N-N, an SS general and an official of the concentration camp branch of the SS organization; Gustav Scheel, S-C-H-E-E-L, Gauleiter of Salzburg, Austria, and designated Minister of Education in Hitler's will; Dr. Heinrich Hasselmeier, head of the National Socialist Student League and Hitler's, quote, expert on race and sterilization, unquote. Last name H-A-S-E-L-M-E-Y-E-R. Dr. Carl Scharping, S-C-H-A-R-P-I-N-G, a propaganda official under Dr. Goebbels; Heinz Siepen, oh, by the way, Scharping, S-C-H-A-R-P-I-N-G, Heinz Siepen, S-I-E-P-E-N, another district leader of the Third Reich. The British announced that they had confiscated, quote, tons of material, unquote, four truckloads, and after the first check, they hinted that a careful examination would produce ample evidence to back up an indictment of conspiracy and high treason. The seven arrested men were described as the leaders of a group of 125 important Nazis, whose aim was to infiltrate the three rightist parties in the Adenauer coalition. Their final goal had been, quote, the overthrow of the Bonn parliamentary regime, unquote. The arrest of the plotters had a strong effect upon the Bonn government and on German public opinion. According to a dispatch in the New York Times, Chancellor Adenauer was, quote, shocked and angered, unquote. The Times, quoting from the Generalanzeiger of Bonn, a paper close to Adenauer, said that the British, quote, had contrived the whole affair for the purpose of warning the Americans against entering a direct alliance with the dangerous Germans, unquote. By the way, the Generalanzeiger is G-E-N-E-R-A-L-A-N-Z-E-I-G-E-R. Times correspondent, this New York Times, by the way, Times correspondent Drew Middleton reported from Bonn that, quote, the German public sentiment began to crystallize in defense of the seven arrested National Socialists, unquote. Leading Bonn officials and politicians, supported by the majority of the German press, opened an all-out campaign against the British, implying that they had sinister motives and telling them that they had no business poking into a strictly domestic German affair. Only a handful of Democratic and conservative papers took a more critical view of the Naumann conspiracy. By the way, in an asterisk, Tettens writes, although this information is based upon a collection of several hundred dispatches and editorials, I have drawn chiefly on the reports from the New York Times of January 16th to 18th, 1953. Also of special significance were several articles which appeared in the Frankfurter Rundschau and the Stuttgarter Nachrichten during the latter part of January 1953, revealing the magnitude of the Naumann plot. By the way, Frankfurter Rundschau, F-R-A-N-K-F-U-R-T-E-R, R-U-N-D-S-C-H-A-U, and Stuttgarter Nachrichten, S-T-U-T-T-G-A-R-T-E-R, N-A-C-H-R-I-C-H-T-E-N. Now note again that German public opinion has crystallized against the British, and the Adenauer government itself is condemning the British here for their actions in arresting these plotters. Note that not only was Naumann designated to succeed Goebbels by Hitler in his will, but that also these other high Nazi officials, including Gustav Scheel, was designated Minister of Education in Hitler's will. So these are the designated successors of Adolf Hitler. Now, in noting the outcry by both the Adenauer government, the supposed, quote, new, unquote, German government, and the German people against the British arrest of the coup plotters, we are now going to see what the basic rub was, so to speak, why they were outraged at the British and what they were charging, at least publicly, that the British were going to do. Now, again, this is, for those who hear the program on tape, this is September 20th, 1992. On this date, the French have narrowly voted to ratify the Maastricht Treaty, which will unify Germany and will or unify Europe, I should say, Freudian slip, and will provide for an all-European currency by 1999. The European Union, which at some point figures to include the former Warsaw Pact countries as well as the now independent republics of the former Soviet Union, will become by far and away the most powerful political and in particular economic entity on the face of the earth. And unified Europe is, and in all probability for a long time will be, dominated by Germany and its economic affairs dominated by the German mark. And again, for the people who eventually hear this on tape, in the past week or two, there have been some very frightening fluctuations in the European currencies and some very frightening developments in the world's capital markets as a result of the Germans' refusal to lower their interest rates past the quarter of a point lowering that they have, they've agreed to. And the mark, at this point, is by far and away the strongest currency in the world, certainly a whole lot stronger than the dollar and a whole lot stronger than the lira. And so note again that in 1992, some events that we're going to look at here have come to fruition. And when I speak of the United States again as having lost the Second World War, we're talking about a political and consequent economic defeat, not a military defeat, but that defeat accomplished through the establishment of the Christian West concept, the adoption of liberation theory, its ascension as a result of a number of events, including the assassination of John Kennedy after it had become a major political force as well as a strategic force, and the ultimate ascension, the triumph, I should say, of liberation theory, originally a Third Reich tactic, in the Reagan and Bush administrations, and the projection of many of the Galen and SS-related elements into positions of activism in the former Warsaw Pact states and the former Soviet Union. In some of those areas, they are now ascendant. They are triumphant. Returning again to the reasons behind the German protest against the British arrest of the Naumann coup plotters, the main concern of German government officials and the press was that the British had acted, quote, unfairly, unquote, against Bonn at a moment when Dr. Adenauer had to face a most delicate international situation. At that time, the Adenauer cabinet hoped for a speedy ratification of the European Defense Community Treaty, or EDC, which would restore full German sovereignty and would be the first step toward political unification of Europe. Again, at that time, the Adenauer cabinet hoped for a speedy ratification of the European Defense Community Treaty, or EDC, which would restore full German sovereignty and would be the first step toward political unification of Europe. To raise the specter of a resurgent Nazi danger before world opinion at such a time, at such a moment, was, in Dr. Adenauer's eyes, an unpardonable crime. Last sentence again. To raise the specter of a resurgent Nazi danger before world opinion at such a time, at such a moment, was, in Dr. Adenauer's eyes, an unpardonable crime. The Chancellor was especially bitter because the British High Commissioner, Sir Yvonne Kirkpatrick, had not consulted him before the arrest. That's Ivone Kirkpatrick. Continuing. The British reply was polite, but determined. It pointed out that the occupation authorities had been profoundly disturbed when they had found evidence of an advanced plot instigated by a vast Nazi network spreading from Dusseldorf to Cairo, Madrid, Buenos Aires, and Malmo, Sweden. Malmo, M-A-L-M-O, umlaut over the O. Again, take note of this advanced Nazi plot and where it spreads, the areas it covers. It pointed out that the occupation authorities had been profoundly disturbed when they had found evidence of an advanced plot instigated by a vast Nazi network spreading from Dusseldorf to Cairo, Madrid, Buenos Aires, and Malmo, Sweden. They stated furthermore that they had had to proceed with the utmost secrecy since the plotters had close contacts with high government circles in Bonn. Again, they stated furthermore that they had had to proceed with the utmost secrecy since the plotters had close contacts with high government circles in Bonn. Bear in mind again that in 1944, Kurt Ries was writing about the plans to have both the Nazi Party and the German government go underground in cellular organizations, and to have the German government organized, the German government cells, the government cells, I should say, organized in cells with an A man and a B man, the A man, to maintain contact with government higher ups, and the B man to be in touch with the Nazi Party, the underground part of the organization. And as we're going to see, those A men were in very, very, very close contact with the Adenauer government and the higher ups in that particular government. Returning again, now bear in mind that was 44, we're going to return again to 1953 as related in a book published in 1961. According to the New York Times, the British submitted evidence to the Chancellor which, quote, revealed a widespread plot with ramifications into many political parties and other influential organizations of West Germany, unquote. Faced with the grave implications of the Naumann conspiracy, Dr. Adenauer and his Minister of Justice, Dr. Thomas Dehler, D-E-H-L-E-R, had to confirm the seriousness of the case. After the British had convinced Dr. Adenauer that they had an open and shut case against the Naumann plotters, the Bonn government suddenly exerted great pressure to bring the proceedings under German jurisdiction. Again, after the British had convinced Dr. Adenauer that they had an open and shut case against the Naumann plotters, the Bonn government suddenly exerted great pressure to bring the proceedings under German jurisdiction. On March 13, 1953, Dr. Adenauer wrote a letter to the British High Commissioner asking, quote, that the investigation and eventual prosecution of Dr. Naumann and his associates should be handed over to the German authorities, unquote. The British responded favorably to this request on March 26, 1953. After taking over the investigation, Dr. Adenauer admitted at a press conference, quote, the existence of a far-flung plot, unquote, and that Naumann's activities, quote, had been financed with considerable sums by Nazi groups in foreign countries. Again, quote, Naumann's activities had, quote, been financed with considerable sums by Nazi groups in foreign countries, unquote. Again, remember the role of the projected role of the Ausland Organisation and the projected role of Latin America, including Argentina, among other places, in the post-World War II underground Reich. Continuing with T.H. Tetten's text here. Minister of Justice Dehler told reporters that the Naumann group had developed, quote, a most cunning and diabolic system of infiltration, unquote, and that the conspiracy represented, again quoting, an acute threat to the democratic institutions in the Federal Republic, unquote. The captured Naumann documents, he said, again quoting, gave clear proof that the aim of the group had been to fill key positions in all rightist parties with hardcore Nazis and thereby create propaganda vehicles which later could be used for a broad neo-Nazi mass movement. And again, note here that this is supposedly a frustrated coup, the aims of which, quote, gave clear proof that the aim of the group had been to fill key positions in all rightist parties with hardcore Nazis and thereby create propaganda vehicles which later could be used for a broad neo-Nazi mass movement, unquote. As we'll see later on in this series, they did exactly that. In fact, we're going to see pretty firm indications of that this evening, continuing but with Tetten's account. According to the Wiesbadener Courier of May 6, 1953, Dr. Dehler quoted from one document in which Naumann expressed the hope that, if his scheme succeeded, quote, the coming election might be the last of its kind, unquote. The Wiesbadener Courier, Wiesbadener Courier. Now, we're going to see next what happened after the British agreed to transfer prosecution of the Naumann case to the German authorities. And recall again that the Germans, including the Adenauer government, rallied behind the plotters because they felt that this was simply a British conspiracy to warn Washington against an alliance with the dangerous Germans, and that beyond that, this jeopardized the ratification of the European Defense Community Treaty, which would restore full German sovereignty, and that that would be the first step toward political unification of Europe, which almost 40 years after the Naumann coup in 1992 has now basically been achieved. And of the Germans' curious handling of the Naumann plotters, Tettens writes as follows. Soon after the British had transferred the prosecution of the case to the German authorities, the lawyers of the arrested plotters began to put pressure on the federal government to suppress the case and release their clients. The Bremer Nachrichten reported on June 15, 1953, that the Naumann lawyers had even threatened to discuss, quote, the true background of the case openly, unquote, if their clients were not released soon. Now, note here again that the Naumann lawyers were threatening to discuss, quote, the true background of the case openly, unquote, if their clients were not released soon. As we'll see later, the Naumann plotters had some very, very tight leashes on the Adenauer government, and beyond that, the German government, all facets of the German government. Continuing with Tettens' account, by the end of June 1953, Dr. Naumann and his co-plotters were suddenly released in violation of the most rigid stipulations of German law and court procedure. A year and a half later, in December 1954, in spite of the fact that the prosecutor had brought an indictment against Naumann charging conspiracy against the Constitution of the Federal Republic, the highest court quietly dismissed the case without any trial or hearing. Again, the plotters were not only released, the case against them was dismissed by the highest court in West Germany in December of 54. In future installments of RFA 37, we're going to take a look at the complete reinstitution of the Third Reich judicial system in post-World War II Germany, in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. Recall that in RFA number 2, part of which was replayed last week, we took a look at how in 1981, the Reichstag fire verdict became official, unchallengeable German law. Continuing now with Tettens' account, even before the plotters were released, the British became suspicious about the handling of the Naumann case and leaked some of the incriminating material to a staunchly democratic German newspaper, which had gained quite a reputation for its revealing articles on the infiltration of former Nazis into the Adenauer administration. During the early part of June 1953, the Frankfurter Rundschau published 5 articles dealing with Naumann's tapped telephone conversations, notes from his appointment calendar, correspondence between the plotters, and significant excerpts from his diary. The published material gave a full, inside view of the scope and character of the conspiracy. The description of the intricate structure of the plot and the background of the many people involved filled whole pages in the Frankfurter Rundschau. Here, it is sufficient to state the main objectives as they emerge from the confiscated material. And again, this from documents taken from the Naumann plotters, as well as from material taken from phone taps. 1. Use the democratic constitution as a facade behind which a new Nazi movement could be organized, designed to take over the apparatus of the state when time and circumstances would make such a step necessary and profitable. 2. Let Chancellor Adenauer serve as a front, exactly as Gustav Stresemann did during the 20s, behind which a new German power could develop undisturbed without arousing premature suspicions. Stresemann, by the way, Stresemann. 3. Apply a new method of infiltration, Unterwanderung, in order to conquer the existing parties and the administrative machinery of the state from within. Unterwanderung is Unterwanderung. And again, note that they are going to try and conquer the existing parties and the administrative machinery of the state from within. The success they enjoyed, we're going to see both this evening and in future installments. Avoid noisy nationalistic demonstrations, flag-waving, and incidents. Use the more efficient and unsuspicious procedure of working in small cells, which someday, at an opportune moment, might consolidate themselves into a broad mass organization. Note this last sentence. Does this have a familiar ring to it? Now, again, we're talking about 1953, as reported in a book in 1961 by one of the foremost authorities on pan-Germanism in the Third Reich. Avoid noisy nationalistic demonstrations, flag-waving, and incidents. Use the more efficient and unsuspicious procedure of working in small cells, which someday, at an opportune moment, might consolidate themselves into a broad mass organization. Obviously, we are seeing here in the Nauman coup of 53 the use of the very cells which we saw being put together in 1944. Continuing, the detailed plan, which the Germans soon called the Now-Now strategy, instructed former well-known Nazi leaders to stay discreetly in the background until the time was ripe for action. In the meantime, the leaders were to use all their connections to bring bright and capable young Nazis, especially those trained in the Hitler Youth, into influential positions not only in the Adenauer coalition parties, but also into all other political organizations. The Naumann documents revealed much more than a mere strategic blueprint of how to subvert a state apparatus or the existing parties from within. There was a detailed record of how Dr. Naumann had used his contacts with top industrialists and leading politicians to fill well-paid positions in the Free Democratic Party with scores of young, able Nazis who once had learned the tricks of the trade in the Goebbels propaganda ministry. Now, bear in mind that, as we took a look at in The Nazis Go Underground, that ministry was dissolved. But obviously, Dr. Werner Naumann, designated in Hitler's will to succeed Josef Goebbels, was able to resurrect that, at least in an underground fashion. Note again now that the program for having the German government undergo underground was to have two-man cells, an A-man and a B-man, the A-man maintaining contact with the higher-ups in the German government, the B-man with the underground Nazi party, the illegal part of the movement. And recall again that last week we took a look at the reinstitution of all of the Third Reich, the major Third Reich industrialists and financiers, all of the important ones, at the end of World War II due to the good graces of their American counterparts, who together, the Americans and the Germans, formed the main elements of this transatlantic financial and industrial axis that I have spoken about. And again, I want to reiterate that it is the industrialists, both the pro-Nazi and non-ideological collaborators in the United States, as well as their German counterparts, who form the real foundation of the events that I'm describing here in Radio Free America 37.
That's again from AFA program number 37 from the fall of 1992. The text in turn was excerpted from T.H. Petten's The New Germany and the Old Nazis from 1961, available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website, along with a wealth of other material. So please use the Spitfire List website. My entire life's work is up there, as well as the old anti-fascist books and a lot of material by a collaborator who posts under the name of Terra Fractal, capital P-T-E-R-R-A-F-R-A-C-T-Y-L, SpitfireList.com. This concludes side one, for the record program number 768, What the Hell Does Dave Emery Mean by Underground Reich? Part 1, The Naumann Coup Attempt of 1953. This is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2014.